Coming up, the future of education is virtual. But what are the hurdles with doing international theological education online?
One of the challenges that oftentimes when we think about providing theological education, we're talking about taking the resources we have and simply bringing them into a new context, perhaps translating them into another language. And what we've discovered over the years was that what these schools needed was to grow in their own capacities to integrate biblical theological education to address specific needs in their cultures.
Rob Hayden and Al Cuthbert join us to explain. But first, a word from ABWE President Paul Davis.
ABWE missionaries are coming beside the lost and the hurting around the world. And through the Global Gospel Fund, they're pulling people from the darkness and training them as leaders. They're planting churches, and they're even beginning their own missions movements. You may already support one ABWE missionary. Would you consider a gift to the Global Gospel Fund to support all 1,000 of our missionaries? Thank you for that.
Become a partner today at abwe.org/globalgospelfund. Welcome to the Missions Podcast, the show that explores your hard questions on missions, theology, and practice to help goers think and thinkers go. I'm Alex Kochman, Director of Advancement and Communications for ABWE, joined again by Scott Dunford, West Coast Advancement Coordinator, Lead Church Planter at Redeemer Church in Fremont, California. And Scott, you and I have talked about my interesting educational resume. I went to a school that most people wouldn't think. You look at what I'm doing now, basically, and you look at my resume, my education, all those sorts of things. It wouldn't make sense to you, right? We've joked about that before. That's not germane to the topic of today's show, but that's all just to say that when I was in college, my friend, I took a lot of online courses. And I will say that at times you get out of those what you put into it, right? You don't always learn the same way with online education. Now, your kids, you're in California with lockdowns and everything. Did they go online? What was the online education experience like for them?
Well, currently it's simply just classroom education with a Zoom camera on. And I can just say that doesn't work very well. But that's what they're doing.
It's challenging. So the reason we bring that up is because we want to talk about online education today. There's some startling statistics if you look at it. Theological famine is a theme that we've addressed before on the show. And the number of pastors throughout the world without any kind of formal biblical or theological education, that's something that the North American church can really step up and take all the resources that we have and give those to the world. And we also live in an era where online education is becoming increasingly normal. But how do we do that well, right? Because we also recognize that there's not anything really that can replace the flesh and blood. So I'm excited. Actually, this is our second attempt at an interview with these fine gentlemen, and it's because of technology, ironically. So I think we have to overcome sort of maybe the stigma of relying on technology to the extent that we do. But I think there's nobody better to make this case positively than our two guests today. Scott, would you introduce them for us?
Yeah, so we're really pleased to introduce you to Alan Cuthbert, who is the president, and Rob Hayden, who's the vice president of educational development for Horizons International Network. And I'll let them tell a little bit more about what that is, because it is something that kind of started out of necessity, but has just continued to grow and serve schools and universities, Christian seminaries all around the world in ways that continue to shock me, for sure. So guys, rather than me butcher what you're doing, first of all, welcome to our show again, and for the first time for our listeners. And can you just tell us, you know, a little bit of introduction about yourselves individually, your educational backgrounds, and then tell us a little bit, maybe I'll let you, Al, as the president, tell us a little bit about what is Horizons and how did it get started. So why don't you introduce yourselves and then talk about a little bit about Horizons.
Okay. Thank you, Alex and Scott. It's a privilege to be here with you guys and to be able to share a little bit about theological education and the beginning of Horizon Education Network. I have served as a missionary with ABWE for over 40 years, first 16 years in Sao Paulo, Brazil, in theological education, church planting. And then I was asked by the Southern Cone missionaries, that is missionaries that came out of Argentina, Paraguay, Chile, to join a group of seminary directors to talk about how can we best work together as seminaries and fill the gaps that were necessary in courses, faculty, sharing students. And out of that, Horizon Education Network was born over 22 years ago. I took the position as an interim president, now full-time president, and moving into online learning. We jumped into the Moodle when it first began in 2003, and I've been using Moodle that is in 78 different languages around the world. And so we network with theological schools all over the world to provide online learning. We help them develop their faculty. We help develop administrative components and then help them build courses that are culturally relevant to the countries that they're working in to train pastors.
And I'm Rob Hayden, and I joined with Al here about 16 years ago. My experience had also been in missions, having served in the fields of Israel short-term and then more long-term in Slovakia with ABWE. And it was through that experience that the Lord really awakened a desire in me to be involved more significantly in the area of theological education, in part because of the challenges that we saw with so many churches being led by pastors with little to no theological education. And so it's been a blessing to be able to partner with Al here over these past 16 years.
We've used this term on the show before, and it's how we began the show, this term theological famine. I think it's an accurate term. 85% of pastors, church leaders globally have no formal training. You can imagine how that leads to abuses. Somebody who is sitting under a tree and whatever they dream, that becomes the content of the next sermon. And then there's other men who are being incredibly faithful and doing the absolute best that they can in handling the text of God without formal training. And there's a whole spectrum in between. But technology has made it possible for us to deliver training and resources and theological truth to people in parts of the world without the technological infrastructure. But because everybody has one of these, everybody has a smartphone now in their pocket, they're able to do a lot more. So explain to us what you do. Why, first of all, why is that a problem that so much of the world lacks formal theological training?
Well, one of the realities that you hinted at in what you were just saying, Alex, is this idea that there are faithful servants who are working in churches and yet who feel the great load, the burden upon them to lead the church in a way that's faithful and helps them to grow spiritually. And many of these men who are pastoring would love to have theological education, but to leave their congregations would mean to leave their church susceptible to other kinds of heresy and problems, and very likely they may return to a church that has gone astray. And the statistics, coming back to kind of where you started, the great majority of those who leave to go away to receive theological education elsewhere do not return to where they've come from. And while many of them do go into other kinds of ministries, it leaves an incredible vacuum for the church in the places that they come from. And so your word famine is very accurate in terms of how this kind of cascades into additional problems if they have not received training to lead their and feed their flocks as they want to.
So picking up on something you said there, Rob, I want to ask you, Al, your website says it's 8%, right, of those leaders that go abroad for training never return. And I mean, I've sat in seminary classes with guys at the doctoral level from all over the world, and it's pretty amazing. And I understand why they want to come. In fact, you know, I answer a lot of the emails for ABWE mobilization, and we get inundated almost every day with at least a dozen people wanting to come here and do training for mission work from around the world. Can you explain, Al, at least, you know, to the best of your knowledge, what happens to these churches when their best and brightest aspiring ministers leave and come to the States for training and then don't come back? What's left behind when that happens?
Part of the challenge I get in is that these men come to our country here in America. We don't realize they become enculturated into a North American Western mindset. I've seen this in Brazil. I was raised there. I saw many young people that were sent back to the United States to get training. One that came back into a Brazilian church And the Brazilian church literally rejected him, saying, you know, we wanted a Brazilian pastor. We didn't want an American one, because then they bring back all of their Western training. We don't understand that our schools are here are prepared to train pastors for the North American context. They're not trained necessarily and understand the context in another country. The other challenge is we've had some where their wives have said, I don't want to go back. I mean, this is a lot better life here. And I know several that I have mentored even who have remained in the United States and do not want to go back into their own culture again. So, and it leaves a vacuum. The Brazilian church even supported some of these, one of these pastors that had come to the States, supported him during his 3 years. And then when he didn't return, it angered them and said, you know, we paid for this to happen. Now you don't, you're walking away from us and leaving that vacuum, especially when they're going for graduate degrees where they can fill in spots in seminaries around the world. And when those they come back again, we're still left with those empty spots because they have not returned with their graduate degrees.
So we've talked a little bit about why what you do is so important, but I got to ask your forgiveness because I did start the episode being a little bit down on online education. I'm dissing my own education too, but I did end up taking a lot of online classes. I think a lot of us have had some experience lately with online education, and sometimes you can have a great experience. Other times it's not the same. So what are the concerns and what are some of the drawbacks of relying upon that to deliver such critical biblical and ministry training to people across the world, and many of them in the two-thirds world where that might be their only education that they have in preparation for ministry?
Well, that's a great question, Alex. And I think it's one that we hear a lot and needs to be addressed. And the reality is that part of what Horizon does, and I just maybe preface my response by saying, we are not committed to online education as being the silver bullet for ministry training. We recognize that every mode of teaching and learning has its strengths and weaknesses. And so a lot of what we do is to support campus-based instruction and helping them find ways to use technology to better equip those who come to campus and also to support those who leave and are in ministry as alumni. So it is a broader perspective. But to your question, one of the unique challenges that we saw in just the statistics that Al was talking about is true even in the West. And that is sometimes we look at campus-based teaching and learning as the way ministers should be trained for the church. And I think what we recognize is that every model has its strengths and weaknesses. And unfortunately, at times we don't think critically about what those strengths and weaknesses are. One of the amazing strengths, potential strengths for online education, though, Alex, in your own experience, maybe you would say this wasn't true in those courses that you didn't enjoy, but it's the unique opportunity of bringing training to people in their local context and in their local ministry, instead of forcing them to uproot, and even if it's just to travel several hundred miles away from home to a seminary campus, we're able to bring that training to them. And with the right approach, where we push the teaching and learning into those specific contexts, it gives an opportunity for immediate application, for local accountability, for real life participatory learning that is situated in their context rather than simulated in a classroom. And so one of the advantages of online is the fact that they're right where they're serving and they can immediately put into practice those principles that are being described and discussed. And so part of the challenge then becomes for online educators to work hard to say, how can we do this well? How can we partner with those local communities, those local churches, in ways that really meet our standards while at the same time giving the opportunity to immediately integrate learning within the context of life and ministry?
There's a good illustration of that. We had a professor that was teaching in Venezuela at the time when Chavez was president, and he shut down literally all the theological schools in Venezuela and kicked most of the foreigners out of the country. Well, this theological educator was forced to leave. He moved to Costa Rica, was teaching and training pastors from different places in Venezuela. And from Costa Rica, he went online with us in Moodle back to those same students who were in Venezuela, and he shared with us, he said, you know, I was teaching these students in a classroom and I thought I knew them. When I went online and they began to share and dialogue in the forums and open up and share in the class, so I began to realize I didn't know them as well as I thought I did when I was in a classroom. He said, I don't want to go back to a classroom anymore. This is fantastic. And he has been reaching literally thousands of students for training Spanish all over the world as a result of his ministry there. I just received an email yesterday from one of our schools out in the Philippines saying we are now reaching students in Qatar and another Middle East country where those students would never be able to come to our campus. And he said, we are having phenomenal success in reaching them all over. We have students that are coming from 95 countries around the world. We have 5,500 students studying on our sites around the world.
Well, online education has its challenges, but any kind of cross-cultural communication is going to involve struggle and setback. So, Alan, Rob, I want to hear more about those challenges. But first, let's take a quick break and hear from our partners. We'll be right back with Al Cuthbert and Rob Hayden of Horizon Education Network.
Hi, I'm Scott Dunford, and I'd like to share with you about a new nonprofit ministry established to help churches, Christian schools, and other ministries protect children and prevent abuse. Rich Hemmar from Church Law and Tax states that the number one reason that drives churches to court is child sexual abuse. I can't think of anything more devastating to these lives, their families, and our witness before a watching world than sexual abuse that takes place in ministry. The traumatic impact often leaves the vulnerable not wanting anything to do with God or His people. Our efforts toward evangelism, discipleship, and spiritual formation are not only neutralized, but shattered. Evangelical Council for Abuse Prevention was formed to help ministry leaders understand the complexities of child protection and abuse prevention. They are establishing standards and an accreditation program that will help verify that appropriate measures are in place at your church or ministry. Learn more about them. Find a helpful and free assessment tool to help you see how you measure up in this area. Go to abuseprevention.org and click on the link for this resource assessment. Evangelical Council for Abuse Prevention.
And this June, attend the national conference. Go to abuseprevention.org and register with ABWE21 as the promo code to receive 20% off your ticket. That's promo code ABWE21 to receive 20% off.
Brooks Buser, president of Radius International.
I am here with Mark Dever, senior pastor at Capitol Hill Baptist and president of Nine Marks.
When you go to a culture that's a different language than yours, you're ending up in a kind of majority language that's been reached. And there are other peoples still more hidden, and it's those people who are often almost entirely unreached, and they take more cross-cultural effort. Is there a way we can better train people to have more realistic expectations of what life is like in the kind of two steps away from my culture? And be able to sustain family life with its normal difficulties there so that there can be a long years and even decades long witness in that culture. And it seems like Radius is set up to provide that training. Radius is about reaching unreached people groups.
Go to radiusinternational.org, radiusinternational.org.
Back with Al Cuthbert and Rob Hayden of Horizon Education Network discussing online theological training. Is it effective? How has COVID changed it? And is it accomplishing what traditional missionaries can't? So, Scott, you wanted to hop in and ask a question.
To follow up on that, you know, I would imagine I'm thinking about school in the context of what we've experienced it, both online and in person. And obviously adding in the international component adds a lot of wrinkles to that. I mean, we've struggled a little bit even just connecting us, you know, between Grand Rapids, Fremont, California, and Harrisburg, you know. But beyond that, there's a lot of barriers, right, when you're getting into like cultural barriers and linguistic barriers. So what are some of the challenges that you guys have experienced and had to work through from doing international and cross-cultural theological education? What are some of the challenges that come up as you're trying to deal with that?
Well, one of the challenges that comes immediately to mind, Scott, is the realization that oftentimes when we think about providing theological education, we're talking about taking the resources we have and simply bringing them into a new context, perhaps translating them into another language. And in essence, we're trying to take our Western concepts and ideas and just tweak them in a way so that they're useful and usable in that context. And what we've discovered over the years, even as we were looking to how can we support what's happening, that was not really the right focus. What we discovered was that what these schools needed was to grow in their own capacities to be able to integrate biblical theological education to address specific needs in their cultures. And so a lot of what Horizon does is rather than force a curriculum on a partner, is to partner with them and say, how can we help you achieve your local educational goals in ways that are educationally sound, they're biblically integrating biblical concepts in a way that recognizes the authority of Scripture. And so it's a partnership. And so a lot of what we do is to try to turn ownership over to our partners so that they're the ones driving these decisions and we're supporting them in that and providing feedback and dialogue. And by doing that, it allows them then to customize these ideas so that it fits. It fits their purposes. It fits their context. It fits the unique needs of people on the ground.
I love the idea that by doing this online, you're avoiding the problems of people who leave their context, sometimes a very unreached context, and never return, right? You're making sure that those theological resources stay where they need to be on the field. So I got to imagine there's exciting examples of that. What are some stories of some of the coolest things that you've seen God do using online education and some of the programs that you've been able to build to spread the gospel through the ministry of these nationals who received training?
Well, let me share one story that is quite amazing to me, especially from as an educator. Well, we have a partner in Brazil, and this particular city in São Paulo is a huge town. And so even to drive across town to get to a seminary building for an evening class is an incredible commitment. There was one surgeon who had wanted to be have theological training, and he couldn't make it to campus. And so the online teaching and learning provided him a context to study. He took a course on the Gospels, Jesus' life and ministry. And then what we saw from our perspective here in Grand Rapids was he dropped off the map. We didn't see him taking additional classes. And so we thought, well, sounds like a failure, really, you know, that he took a class and didn't continue. And yet what we discovered, Al was in Brazil one day, and in God's providence, two people stopped into the seminary building. And here it was this surgeon, along with one of his colleagues from Japan. And what we discovered was that when he dropped out of the classes, it was because he thought, boy, I'm learning all this great stuff, but I'm not integrating it and applying it to my life. I can't move on to another course while I haven't applied it. So he began to teach what he learned in the classroom via Skype to a group of other physicians in Japan, ended up leading this man to Christ that was with him, mentored him across, you know, that distance using Skype. And finally, this man who had been led to Christ by this Brazilian surgeon decided to get on a plane and fly to Brazil to meet his mentor. And together they came to the seminary to thank the seminary for reaching out to them via an online opportunity. And Al just happened to be there to hear the story. Again, incredible how what looked to us as a failure in education was God at work through this man leading others to Christ. A phenomenal story.
So cool.
So I'm hearing you talk about places that are really very diverse, right? Middle East, Brazil, Venezuela, the Philippines. Can you give us some idea of the scope of what Horizon's doing? I know even talking offline, you've talked about some different educational groups that you guys are working with and have partnered with. Help us to understand a little bit more of like the scope and how many countries are you working in? How many languages, do you have courses? Have you worked with courses in? I mean, help us understand a little bit about that. And what is the future of Horizons? What do you guys dream of having happen in the next, you know, decades?
Yeah, that's a great question, Scott. Currently, we are working in 8 different languages, and we've just moved into Arabic right now as we're moving into a new partner that's based out of Oxford, England, really, and they're training students all the way through Iraq, Iran, where they cannot have a traditional school. This is an exciting opportunity. And we have other schools in Moldova that is reaching all through the Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, all those areas where we really, it's very difficult. And they're sending out, they were sending out teachers into these countries and realize we can't go anymore. It's too costly. Now through online, they're able to reach them. So we're into the Middle East through many countries. Right now we have, as I said, we have students coming out of 95 countries of the world. And as some of these schools go online, they find, for example, we have the Russian speaking schools. They're reaching students in Germany, in Israel, Russian speaking students all over the world that they never thought they would ever encounter. So it has literally opened up a huge group that they just never thought. In Africa alone, we have several groups that are really almost into every country, reaching both French speakers, English speakers, and Portuguese speakers in the continent of Africa. And then into Asia, we have several schools that are trying to reach out, like this one that I mentioned, to Qatar, where they have workers there. It's just really the expanse. We offered last year 910 courses went off of our sites from Horizon. And then with the 5,500 students, we worked in the last 2 years with 112 seminaries out of 52 countries of the world in partnership with our this group that we've been working with, the Overseas Council. And we're excited. The future is immense. They're looking at how can we help our train administration. This is another challenge we have. We've had seminaries say, listen, you know, our teachers, they know their content. They may be theological educators, but they don't have education. They don't have training on how to teach. And so they're wanting to have classes in education, administration. We sometimes just move a pastor into the administration of a seminary. We've never trained them in the administration of a school. So we work with our Overseas Council to train administrators, train the faculty. We have courses that train the students, train managers to run their own sites within their own country too. So it's the future. I believe that in the next 2, 3, 4 years, we may be up near to 10,000 students.
That's incredible. So you told a story that we didn't get onto this episode that I want to make sure that you tell, because I mean, it would be natural to think, well, you know, online education is great for those that live in big cities and get good Wi-Fi or, you know, have access to broadband in some way. And yet you were telling us that that is a misunderstanding of how technology is changing, and that even sometimes in very remote places, people can get access to theological education. Can you tell us about how that's possible?
Sure. Scott, we have, and we've been invested a little bit into what we call the Moodle box. It's a little box about 3 inches by 3 inches. And it has inside this little Moodle box the capability that a cell phone does to emit a signal. And we can load all of our courses into this little box. It can run off of a battery. We used it in Togo. For 3 days before the battery died, everybody in the hotel had access to it. It doesn't go on the internet, so we can take it into an area where you have limited power, a limited access because it doesn't have to have an internet, and they can study and talk to each other. They can upload their discussion forums, upload their work, and then we can take this little box, hook it to the internet, and it uploads and downloads everything. You can take it back out to that area again, and they can all study as if they were on the internet. And this is a growing tool. We took it to Cuba, and it's being used in Cuba by some of our schools, testing it, working it, where there may be limited access to the internet. But the internet is growing. It's phenomenal how Asia is dominating almost 50% of internet access around the world. Africa is growing tremendously. We think, well, you know, there are limited sources, but there's cabling all around the continent of Africa, and they're moving into the newest internet access than what we have here in the States. So we are looking to the future, And Horizon isn't an organization that's just building something from the past. We want to make sure that we're on the wave and helping these schools move forward to prepare for the future and not just meet the current needs they have, but how that can they move forward. And we believe online education is a key area. So developing courses and classes that where students are really engaged instead of 60 minutes, Alex, like you had with somebody lecturing, they're engaged constantly. They could use video. So these things are growing, and we're great. We're looking all the time for new technology that enables us to be ahead of the curve in terms of where we need to go.
Could I add to that just for 1 second?
Yeah.
One of the exciting things to us has been to watch how the willingness of partners to network together and to share and to be generous with each other and the impact that we think this will have for the future of theological education globally. So when the pandemic hit back in March, one of the really amazing things was for us to watch some of our partners catch a vision, instead of being competitors with other seminaries in their region, of saying, hey, we've developed this program. We want to share it with these other schools so they don't have to close their doors. And a school in Colombia, in essence, took their best programs and shared them with other Spanish-speaking seminaries so there would be continuity and they wouldn't lose any momentum. We've had some that have partnered where they took another school and allowed them to share their building. And so you've got two schools under the same roof with different focus and recognizing as they work together that some of these things that are being developed within the network can then be shared across cultures. So it used to be maybe Horizon was developing a lot of resources. Anymore, it's our partners developing it and we're sharing it. And so it's not just things coming from English to everywhere else. There are things being developed in Portuguese and in Russian that are being able to come back into English or other places. And that networking, I think, is going to be a huge part of what the future of theological education is coming together to share for the sake of the kingdom.
I think another element that's important, excuse me, for Horizon is sustainability. We have a school in southern Ukraine who has a cucumber farm that pays for 70% of their costs at their seminary. And we're excited about this, that we see them all run by national Ukrainian leaders. And Horizon is committed to help build a sustainable model by having more students. They're allowed to bring in more income into their school that helps them fund their campus, but also helps them to reach out and build income so that the school isn't dependent upon Western funding.
So we want to make this practical for people to know how they can get involved. The challenge for you guys is you're incredibly busy. You sound like you have a lot of different things going on, but if somebody does want to become a part of this and plug in with Horizons, what are those opportunities to serve, to give, to be engaged with nationals overseas, maybe to be a theological educator, do that online, or maybe somebody has a ministry that could benefit from some of these resources too?
Yeah, that's a good question. And we're looking for people who are engaged, excited about theological education, but also have an understanding of these cross-cultural dimensions and willing to learn. All of us grew into where we are right now. And it is a learning curve, and we continue to grow. Horizon continues to change. Horizon is an organization in motion. Change is a constant for Horizon. So anybody coming in, we expect you're going to have to learn. You know, we're looking for a new president. We're looking for a vice president, global operations at Horizon. And again, there are people that we are going to be mentoring and helping understand what it means to work in a technology education field. Tim Bahula, who's in Canada, works with us, has his master's in educational technology. So we need different people. We're looking for people who have technology experience. That is a growing dimension who can always keep us on the edge of where things need to be. Also be aware of what's happening in the whole world. We are excited to have national partners who have doctorate degrees in all the regions of the world with our partner. And we look to them constantly to say, what's happening? We're going to do a major research coming up with several hundred theological schools around the world to determine what are the capacities, what are the competencies that are necessary, people who understand the areas of research, study, having educational background. Those are the people that we're excited about that can help us. And to be humble, we learn so much from our national brothers. In fact, we say we learn much more from them than they learn from us. And I think humility and a listening spirit is key to that. And we're looking for those kind of people.
Well, those are some of the things that you hear criticized of Western missions all the time. And it's exciting to see how that's kind of undoing itself and correcting itself within your ministry. If people want to get in touch with you, they want to find out more about Horizons, if they want to serve or give, or maybe they have some questions, what's the best ways to get a hold of you and how can they do that?
Yeah, they can email us at horizon@horizoneducationnetwork.org. horizon@horizoneducationnetwork.org. And we'd be glad to communicate with you and share with you what God is doing.
Well, thank you for sharing with us about your ministry today. And we pray that God continues to bless it and that these resources that we get to enjoy here and take for granted can spread throughout the world. And speaking of which, before you leave, why don't you share this show with someone that you think can benefit from it? And also remember to subscribe and leave us a positive rating and review in your podcast platform of choice. And until next week, thank you so much for listening.